Welcome to Vox Talks, a series of audio interviews with leading economists from around the world. My name is Ramesh Vaitalingam, and today I'm talking to Professor John Walley of the University of Western Ontario. John is also associated with the Centre for International Governance Innovation in Waterloo, Ontario, and he's a research associate of the National Bureau of Economic Research. We're going to talk a little bit about where we are with the Doha round, with the upcoming ministerial later in July. John, why don't you start off by telling us where you think we are with that round of negotiations on trade?
Well, in the short term, we now have a call for a so-called mini-ministerial meeting, which has been made by the Director General of the WTO, Pascal Lamy, which is to take place in later in July, I believe July 21st, 22nd. And this is really a drive now to conclude the round with a firm result. And it's very much an up or down meeting with either a decision and a conclusion or just a round which does not conclude.
What happens if nothing can be agreed?
If nothing is agreed, it leaves the world trading system with a number of imponderables. Is it possible to maintain the rule regime which has been accumulated since 1947, first through the GATT and the WTO? Will that come under pressure and there will be increasing violations of that rule regime? Can the dispute resolution mechanism of the WTO stand up? And we still have resolution of disputes, and how the whole regulatory structure of international trade that's currently manifest in the WTO can be preserved.
So what are the key issues on the table? What are the main sticking points, the big areas of debate and controversy?
The issues in the round are much as they've been now for many years, and they all fundamentally focus on issues of so-called market access. When the round was launched in 2001, there was an attempt to try and have a negotiation on a fairly broad range of issues which had been inherited from the mid-1990s, but many of these other broader issues have dropped away. So we have issues of access in industrial products, and particularly into some of the emerging market economies, which have been stressed by the OECD countries. But there are major issues in agriculture, and the desire to place firmer discipline over the use of agricultural subsidies, and this is both an issue both in the US and the EU. And then there are more narrowly focused issues. Brazil, for instance, at the moment is very concerned over potential market access in ethanol, and highlights the trade restrictions which they face in EU markets. So it's a combination of these trade restrictions and how these can be dealt with in a mutually agreeable manner.
So what really are the barriers to getting an agreement? You said it started in 2001. It's taken a long, long time. Who are the countries or the blocks of countries that are causing the trouble? Is it something to do with the US, the European Union, blocks of developing countries? What are the barriers to getting an agreement?
Well, they're basically the barriers and the forces which have been there for many years. Strong political opposition within the OECD countries to further liberalisation in agriculture. Pressures from the farm community in the US for increased agricultural supports. Difficulties in removing much of the supports which continue to exist in the EU. And in the developing countries, a feeling that further liberalisation beyond which they've undertaken, often unilaterally going back to the 1980s, should not be entered into until there are firm reciprocal offers which come forward from the developed countries. So it's a bargaining arrangement in terms of access and the political opposition to that increased access in the participating countries.
And what have we seen? We've seen a rise, I think, in regional integration issues and bilateral agreements outside of the WTO trading system. Has that been a problem as well?
Well, there has been a proliferation of regional agreements in the trading system, which has accelerated consistently from the 1980s on. There are some estimates now that as many as maybe 400 or 500 regional agreements now exist in the trading system. These are notified to the WTO, and there are some claims that within the next year or two, the total notifications may rise in the region of 800. Now, some of these regional agreements are relatively small and somewhat inconsequential. They may be between pairs of relatively small countries and may be limited in terms of their content. But others have substantial significance and content. A feature of them is that many of these regional agreements now go significantly beyond WTO disciplines. So some of the attempts made in the 1990s to deal with issues beyond conventional trade barriers in areas such as competition policy, investment, and other areas, these are now coming into the regional agreements. So the growth of the regional agreements, in part, is reflecting the relative inability of the multilateral system to deal with these issues.
Now, it was called, I think, at the beginning, the Doha Development Agenda. Do you think that was an error in the way it was set up at the beginning, that it would focus on developing countries?
Well, it is still called the Doha Round with the Development Agenda. And if you talk to people involved in this process from the developing country side, they will stress to you immediately that this is not really a development round. It's a very conventional trade round dealing with exchanges of access to individual country markets. They do not see it and do not accept it as a structure which is fundamentally about development. And it reflects the basic tension which exists in the WTO and has been there, again, for many years, focusing on the purposes of international trade negotiation. Is it simply a mechanism for bargaining between countries in terms of reductions of access barriers, or is it something which is more centrally oriented towards speeding and facilitating the growth of low-income and developing countries in the world?
Now, since the Doha round was launched back in 2001, we've seen big events like 9/11 and a whole global focus on issues around security and terrorism, and we've seen the whole rise of the tackling climate change agenda with the Bali conference and then the Copenhagen coming up. How does the WTO negotiations fit in with these other global issues that are under discussion these days?
I think there's a strong sense that people have that the agenda for the Doha round was largely formed in the late 1990s and occurred before these other issues came onto the agenda. And so the Doha round agenda fundamentally doesn't deal with these issues. Also, there's a sense that these issues are extremely difficult to deal with, and each in different ways. If you take security-related issues, for instance, there's a concern that if there were major further terrorist events and with an elevated profile for security concerns, we could get closing of national markets to international trade because of security concerns, and this would override all pre-existing treaty arrangements. And that fundamentally, this linkage between national security and trade is not one which can easily be dealt with through formal treaty arrangements.
And climate change, how do you see that fitting in with the trade discussion? Is it something we should forget about now, get the Doha round done, and then talk about further on down the road?
Well, some of the people involved in the climate change area and the trade area, I think, believe that there is a growing clash between an emerging environmental regime and the trade regime. The way they would put it is in the following terms. In 1947, when our current institutions were largely formed, in the late 1940s, when the institutions were largely formed at the Bretton Woods Conference, the world was viewed as having countries which were only interconnected through trade and finance. There was no physical interconnection between them. But with the growth of environmental issues, particularly in the last 5 or 10 years, it's become apparent that there have to be ultimately international agreements which recognise that physical interdependence, and that's very dramatically the case in the climate change area. Now, depending upon the scenarios that we talk about for these climate change issues, there's a belief in some circles that eventually the emergence of a new international environmental regime may come to dominate the trade regime in terms of political significance. It will depend on how severe these climate change issues are. And along with that will come issues of linkage to trade and potential conflict with trade. One which is already emerging is the view held in Europe and held elsewhere that if certain entities, certain regions or countries go faster and farther than other regions in terms of their climate change commitments with major emissions reductions, these will impose cost disadvantages on domestic producers, and these have to be offset in some way. And the proposals which circulate widely now are for systems of border adjustments, which could include new tariffs and new export subsidies based on carbon content of products. Put in very simple terms, the concern is that we can have a world which is going progressively green and protectionist at the same time, and we have trade barriers which are in conflict with trade commitments entered into in the WTO system in the form of the tariff bindings.
Final question, John. Are you optimistic or pessimistic that we will reach an agreement on the Doha round in the next few weeks and months?
Most of the people who are close to these negotiations have been quite pessimistic on the situation for some time. They believe that there's been fundamental difficulties in these negotiations, the degree of commitment was not there, that the basic calculations of the parties in terms of what they would have to do are little changed, and to be doing this also at this point with an election in the US looming makes it progressively difficult. Now, having said all that, it's also the case that if you look at previous negotiations, in previous negotiating rounds in the GATT and the WTO, that these were often viewed as difficult, and then in the last final stages, when push came to shove, and faced with the possibility of a lack of an agreement, and belief that the whole GATT and WTO system rested on progressively going forward, and the danger was that we fall off the bicycle and go back to the 1930s, this ultimately was enough of incentive to conclude an agreement.
John Wally, thank you very much.
Thank you. We'll be right back.